Now it's my pleasure to switch hats and introduce you to tonight's main attraction. We're celebrating Ricky Laurentiis as the winner of the 2016 Levis Reading Prize. Ricky Laurentiis was raised in New Orleans, got displaced from there for a while by Hurricane Katrina, did his undergraduate work at Sarah Lawrence, and went on to earn his MFA in creative writing degree from Washington University in St. Louis. He now resides in Brooklyn, New York, where he has taught at Columbia University and Sarah Lawrence College, in addition to working with young people in Harlem. His poems have been published so widely in so many different literary journals of note that I can't list them all, but a brief mention of a few will do. The Boston Review, Callaloo, the Kenyon Review, the New Republic, the Oxford American, the New York Times. That should do. He has been the recipient of numerous honors as well, including a Ruth Lilly Poetry Fellowship, along with fellowships from the National Endowment for the Arts, the Atlantic Center for the Arts, the Bread Loaf Writers Conference, and the Civitella Ranieri Foundation in Italy. His book, Boy with Thorn, not only won our prize, but also was selected by poet Terence Hayes for the 2014 Cave Canem Poetry Prize, and was a finalist for the 2016 Lambda Literary Award and the Tom Gunn Award from the Publishing Triangle. Laurentiis also was named one of the top 10 debut poets of 2015 by Poets and Writers Magazine, and one of 31 contemporary poets you must read by BuzzFeed. As important as such honors can be, however, the most important thing I can tell you about him has to do with the exceptional quality and intensity of the writing he has published. As I told my students today in our workshop, I knew his book was deserving of the award after reading only the first two poems in the book, and the rest of the collection completely confirmed my own expectation so that the final judges, my fellow poetry faculty members here at VCU and I, arrived at the selection of his book very quickly. The book is musically and technically sophisticated and memorable for the skillful display of precise diction, unexpected and delightful rhythms, and inventive forms. Yet even more, what stays with you after reading the book is the rigorous thinking and equally responsible self-awareness and even self-critique that carries on throughout the book, making it spiritually, morally, and philosophically profound. The poems examine the multiplicities and complexities of American violence, while also interrogating the author's fascination with that violence. The poems often describe what is seen and what cannot be unseen. What is it the mind won't unseen? Beautiful flaw. A constant tension is set up throughout between the intensities of outrage and hurt and those associated with passion and compassion. The poems move through many layers of time, bringing the past into revealing confrontations with the present, and all the while the narrator in each of them is characteristically looking back at himself in his time of modernity, wondering why he keeps tearing open again a past incident, knowing that it will pierce him in his own time, that these antique violences will be something that he will again have to imagine, and that imagining will be a thorn, difficult to remove. Poems that enact a complicated sense of responsibility and unflinching honesty, of sympathetic understanding, as well as angry indictment. You want those? Then here's Ricky Laurentiis and Boy with Thorn.
One Country. I want to be released from it. I want its impulses stunned to lead. This body, its breath, let it. Let the whole pageant end. If my body had a river in it, I would drain it. If by the river was a city, let a storm shock and drown it. If in the city was a boy made sick from his body, the freak passions of it, let him come out. His brown skin lifting as a shell. Let it. Let all his limbs pop and unhinge. First his penis, its quick flight as if a comet. The eight fingers next, then thumbs, then tongue. Till every star is on the floor dismissed. Each pointing in its own direction, each another door to the one country where his body is loved and made for. Thank you for that introduction. It means a lot to be heard. So thank you, Greg. And thank you, Kathy, and thank you, Tom, and thank you, David, and thank you to all the students who also read my book and heard me. I didn't expect to be emotional, but that's what happens, right? I'm just really happy to be here and to be in the company of writers and readers who take this as seriously and as importantly as I do, as we all do. So thank you for that. I'm going to be okay. I'm going to get together. And I'm going to read some poems. The next poem is called Conditions for a Southern Gothic. Therefore, my head was kingless. I was a head alone, moaning in a wet black field. I was like any of those deserted slaves whose graves are just the pikes raised for their heads, reshackled, blue and plain as fear. All night I whistled at a sky that mocked me, that fluently changed its grammar as if to match desire in my high. My freedom is possible, it said, as if my torn off head in that bed, swamped and whelming then with water, had one wish, and it did, to think stranger stuff, to break that boring need to always have a shadow trail its maker, such that one, the shadow snaps, rising to kiss the head. Two, the kiss lands, the head flies up in airy revolt. Three, cracked from the head come the crows of its thinking. Four, three crows move in minstrelsy against the night. Five, and the head still singing, last night a Negro was axed. Who among us was made to scratch a myth, speak? If God made us in his image, it was the first failure of the imagination. I never really know what to say between poems. Space is important, the silence. I started collecting these quotes that I like, and I decided I would read those between, in some cases. This is a person you may have heard of called James Baldwin, you know, writer. That's the cover. The cover is a painting by Glenn Ligon, who's an amazing painter, an abstract painter, as he calls himself, and he takes texts, everyone from Zora Neale Hurston to Richard Pryor and James Baldwin, and he abstracts it. He keeps painting over it with coal dust and blackness, and he keeps doing it until the text itself becomes a texture. If you happen to ever see the actual painting, the book too, and if you move it, there's different lights and colors that live inside, supposedly the flat blackness, but we know different. So this is a passage from James Baldwin's Stranger in the Village. That's what I wanted. I was lucky to get it. This is from an essay called The Male Prison. James Baldwin says, "Whether or not homosexuality is natural seems completely pointless to me. Pointless because I really do not see what difference the answer makes. It seems clear in any case, at least in the world we know, that no matter what encyclopedia of psychological and scientific knowledge are brought to bear, the answer can never be yes. And one of the reasons for this is that it would rob the normal, who are simply the many, of their very necessary sense of security and order. I dreamt two men hoisted, hung up, not American, the rope not closed on their breathing, but this rope tied them spine to spine, somehow suspended from the mood of a tree. Not American, they were African, Ugandan, Nigerian, without a license, a right to touch the sin they're touching in sights. And I heard their names called out, revision or die, and you must repent and forget the lie, you lily boys, you faggots, called up from the mob of their mothers, their fathers with Christ in the blood, who had Christ in the blood, who sung out, abide with me. This was my eyes' closed-eyed vision. This is what a darkness makes. And how did I move from that distance to intimacy? So close I could see the four soles of their feet, so close I was nil, could lick those feet, as if I was, because I became the fire who abided. I saw that. I dreamt their black skin made blacker by my feeding. I thought, Christ, why did I think their black skin tipped blacker by this American feeding? But just one shot up a cry, African, it was American. Oh, Lord, abide with me. It was human, lusty, flat. You had to be in the hollow of it to taste it. You had to see how in such lack invention takes hold. They say some dreams come in the moment of waking, stitched because daylight likes a story, that some dreams are extensions of an itch, thief walking the coral of the brain. I say, but I did feel that one blue mouth blow out as I felt the mood of that tree, as I saw the other turn away, apart, stay with silence. I stayed with southern silence. I have a friend, his name is Jericho Brown, he's a poet. Long ago, he said that, you're not a poet till you write a poem about Persephone. And I was like, oh, I guess I better write a poem about Persephone. I don't know if I agree with that. But to the extent that it matters, this is the poem that came out of me thinking about Persephone. Lord and Chariot. I say the dead then caught me in a special knot, and Lord and dragged me to the interior. I say his face is strange here, a moment cruel, but not without its silk, its earned sadness. He asked me to touch it, so I touch it. No light can blossom here, I know, as my bones know. Why ask me who I am? Who really knows the place of my future? I'm his or I'm not. I'm black or black was made me. The light turns the cane a wanted color. I walk its interior. There are only grasses here, only sadness. I pick one. I tear it. I think to be free is to be cruel. He say the dead are versions of himself, little ulcers, little cruel insurgencies. He says, know that I'm master here, my boy, my little sadness. There is no riot, or fear, bought, nodded, I'm the boy in the cane field that's his, the air, or I'm his whip that stirred the air, scarred the light. My back is the touch of violence. Like light, my blood trills. I kneel, I ooze. Cruel underworld, I freeze in your interior, though I'm called queen. I lie at his waist. I know the true color of his loved on skin. I say it's white, not purity. I say that my strength is my sadness. To be free, I think, like him, is a sadness, nothing at all. But to be bold, to light a panic, to tear a cage of cane by blade is not freedom either. The cane grows back. Cruel. Can't you see it's the one word I know? Even my bones know this language and moan it deep in their interior. I say the dead and left me stranded at the interior, which is this stranger's face, his sprawling sadness. I say any blade in my hand is just my hand, and I know its weight exactly, the lift of its bite. Oh, light, sweet molestation in the fields, one lord, one chariot, cruel, cruel silk. I'm a boy in love. Let the dead bury their dead. King of shade, king of scorpions. Then it was cold, like small and selfish teeth, and it was rude, like a poison, and that was your voice, wasn't it? And that was the thrust of your voice, taking up my own, as any boy takes up his kite in the village, in the sheep ring he manages, as a god that will swoop down and take him. Aren't these the days of abduction, after all, not rape? When to prove your devotion assisted a theft of some kind, tear away the boy flesh, the boy bone, and there it is, the solid red muscle, the thrush thrumming in its strict and freakish shade. To know it, you had to claim it. To claim it, break it. The god penetrated with his raw antenna. You moved in me like prayer. In that poem, I was thinking about Ganymede. Ganymede is an amazing person in my mind. He's also the figure for Aquarius, which is what I am. I am Ganymede. Ganymede, apparently, in myth, was the most beautiful boy in the world, according to whatever metrics. So beautiful that the rapist that Zeus is came down and decided to take him, right? But to teach you about male privilege, he takes Ganymede, and instead of Leda, who he just leaves, he brings him up and makes him the cupbearer, which is where we get Acurius, the bear of the water. That angered Hera, his wife, and then she tried to like, okay, I'm skipping over a lot, and a lot of things happen. But eventually, to teach us something about maybe queer sensibility, Ganymede says, you know what, I'm already here, I'm going to figure out how to do something. So he goes to Zeus and he says, he convinces him to make him immortal, and then Zeus throws him into the sky and he becomes Aquarius. So that's me. I feel a connection to all of those things in that story. Another person you may have heard of called Audre Lorde, this is what she has to say. The erotic is a measure between our sense of self and the chaos of our strongest feelings. This is one reason why the erotic is so feared and so often relegated to the bedroom alone when it is recognized at all. Our erotic knowledge empowers us, becomes a lens through which we scrutinize all aspects of our existence, forcing us to evaluate those aspects honestly in terms of their relative meaning within our lives. And this is a grave responsibility projected from within each of us, not to settle for the convenient, the shoddy, the conventionally expected, nor the merely safe. Beautiful bottom, beautiful shame. The way he writhed beneath the other man argued his loneliness, but he wasn't just a blank measure waiting to sound. However much an O his mouth made, he wasn't just an O, thrusting back up against what is almost like a finger, though it isn't, always needing to be touched like a finger to be held. I'm lonely. My waist pinched inward like some vintage Japanese fan, the clever blade of my back working inch by inch toward a pleasure half mine, the way fire pleases, wax pleases. What does possession mean? No, really, tell me. That at this moment, someone beside myself can feel how many times I shudder. Asked if I like it, I like it. I speak out those three syllables, mess myself. The point is, I think to empty. It feels good. To be two men interlocked in a sentence still forming. We dance the dance that says, I want you. Come closer. Come in me. No, really, he said as a whisper, boy, you want to be possessed. Because you see, he had been removed from his body then, per usual. His beauty like a talisman offered. His woundedness revealed. I like to add new poems. That seems fair because we're all writing. They're new. Let's see how that goes. I'm silly at heart, even though there's this sadness. There's a silliness in the middle of it. And I spent some time in St. Louis for my graduate program at Washington University. I loved my program and I loved, you know, working with the professors there, but I did not love St. Louis for reasons that should be pretty understandable now, right? I sort of sensed it in the air, which is not to say that it's specific to St. Louis. St. Louis is an emblem for America, but I sensed it. I felt like it was a place about to implode or explode. After I graduated, the summer after is when Michael Brown was murdered. It was sort of the situation where you had been in the city and you had been experiencing it, and if you're me, you had this sort of experience with this thing. I was literally out the country looking back at that space and trying to grapple with it. The way I do that is hopefully through poetry. Something that Officer Wilson, who's, if you remember, was a police officer that killed Michael Brown, said, I don't know the verb, it troubled me, I guess. So he said, speaking of Michael Brown, he had the most aggressive face. That's the only way I can describe it. It looks like a demon. That's how angry he looked. He continues, as he's coming toward me, I keep telling him to get on the ground. He doesn't. I shoot a series of shots. I don't know how many I shot. I just knew I shot it. Get on the ground. So I wrote this. Continuance, Ferguson, Missouri, 2014. Forever here, Mr. Dark, and tricking me, steaming from a manhole in Missouri, or else you're damp between the motion of the trees, revealing the breezy discourse of those trees, black sound. I can see now how everything I've learned of you is wrong, how an air of dumb assumption lounged on my brow, a liar, winking, claiming a shadow is as empty as my childhood vision of the falling sun meant emptiness. But every child knows what moves the wind at night, knows what leads some birds to develop their unrest in the high green of some trees, or lower, what leans against that tree's bark. A man? Or is it the just barely intelligible idea of one, head back, maybe eyes closed, moaning, working to hysteria, the erection rising like a haunted chain away from him? If I move closer, carrying a glass cup, if my mouth is that cup, though I've known fear move as bravely in this world, move like a physical man, it can shoot a boy. So shoot me. Who said that? Was it really the black of my tongue? But how could any breed of blackness ever wish to be penetrated? I could tell you how a foot creaks, even falling dead in the night, could tell the red a mother cries once she feels that absence drop like pity inside her, but I cannot say what a bullet says as it enters a child's skin. But come in. You can enter me, Mr. Dark. Let tonight be the first night I deeper see the pregnant possibilities of your design. How your fingers move to build such antique attitudes, turning a moaning of the wind into a man, making what is a tease of grass at the hill into terror, now pleasure, then back to grass again. Aren't you the mirror on which all lights balance? Aren't you the line on which all lines cross? Anything lives in you, so that the dark over there can be the dark of Mike Brown, full of breath, that the dark right here can be the dark of my own bastard mind, that the dark come closest to my lips is a shadow's knowledge, full, not ever empty, charitable as it is wicked, risky as it is good, fascination, perversion, and I move to it. To you, a shadow chaser, hearing the birds make restlessness in the trees, watching the man stroke velvet from his body, head still back, maybe eyes parted, or he's singing now. He's at that point when I must surrender my knees to gravity and, mouth ready, get gone. I'll choose what ground I lie on. Last new thing, then I go back to the safe thing. I had the opportunity to visit Palestine or Israel, depending on where you sit with that, I suppose, this May. Frankly, what I saw there is not justifiable, it's not excusable. And I've been writing towards that, but this is a short little thing. I started writing it before, and then I kind of finished it after. It has no title, it's just a thing. I feel the fault line that runs through Palestine to Ferguson. It's one that's been running beneath us a long time, through several borders, across many ages, linking one injustice to another, one set of historical violences to its cousins. Though it's important to note that to link injustices isn't necessarily importantly to conflate or equate them. I can recognize, for instance, the logic that leads to a Palestinian child being killed unceremoniously by a drone attack, a lynching, as linked to the logic that would have a policeman's bullet enter a black American child's head, a lynching, without ever once having to claim that the cries both children made, that their mothers made, were the same. They are not the same. They carry different weights, different colors, but have some kinship, I think. When I say logic, I guess I mean all the discourses that would have these events make sense, even as they are senseless, and therefore continue to propel these events outside the arena of the imagination and into bald reality. The imagination. That's what I'm always thinking about. How it is that thing both uniquely, paradoxically responsible for the ways we can bring harm to each other and all the other ways we can love and heal. Hopefully it'll be an essay, but we'll see. I'm going to read the poem that Greg quoted from earlier today in his wonderful introduction. The simple backstory is that I wanted to write a story about Spanish moss. That's all I wanted. And then as I discovered I was doing that, I realized there's a problem with that because it is both a real thing that I saw in New Orleans, it's a real thing that I think of in my memory, but it's also this fiction or stereotype of the South. I had to figure out a way to deal with both of those. This is called Writing an Elegy. But so tangled in the branches, they had to leave it. The conquistador's black beard cut from his head, whose neck had snapped. His deadness the others had to burn then for the wind to take evenly away. If not for his lust, his sickness to chase, to claim her. If not for that native woman's quick intelligence out climbing. This is what I see. The Spanish moss as convicted to its branches, gray, colonial, but in my century now, suspended so close each vein might well be a hanging fiction of my mind. The moss is a fiction of my mind, a screen swinging on its Gothic hinges, making the light fussier as it swags, giving not just the trees, but my idea of them a Medusa look. That man, I think, had wanted to feed something in himself not worth feeding, had founded a world on it. What is it my mind wants to get at, always extending, hungering, looking back, always tearing open again its own modernity, as if each thought is more than the little present moment it sounds like, but raised at an angle, piercing me, having me imagine to build such antique violences in my head, it is a thorn. This moss has been growing for ages now, can do nothing but snag and grow. What is it the mind won't unsee, beautiful flaw? In another version, the woman dies, and her husband braids her hair through the trees. I'm going to stop doing this. You know Toni Morrison. It's hard to say your favorite quotes, but I read this quote probably daily. It's important. It's an important quote. She says, the function, the very serious function of racism is distraction. It keeps you from doing your work. It keeps you explaining over and over again your reason for being. Somebody says you have no language, so you spend 20 years proving that you do. Somebody said your head isn't shaped properly, so you have scientists working on the fact that it is. Somebody says you have no art, so you dredge that up. Somebody says you have no kingdoms, so you dredge that up. None of that is necessary. There will always be one more thing. She mentions racism, but I think that goes for sexism and homophobia and all the things that say you're less than, and then you have to involve your time proving that you are not. But what if we didn't? Study in black. There's a wind in the grass. Is there here a boat's mast claiming my lonely night too? I see the stars can't be called hanged exactly, just hanging down, not over emptiness, but honest ground. The moon trying the black skin of this river, black corpse. But even plainer, I wonder if these words, my words, will ever bring me fame. I have my age, my injuries, they limit me. I'm like some spook bird I know, solo and roped between where rotting happens and a sky. This pair, this marriage of two. Half naked, fevering, standing up with a feather inked until it bled just above, newly above the collarbone, near the neck, curved there, an apostrophe. Am I what that is, that surface, ephrastic, wrong to touch, but touch me, it begs, so I try it, extend the finger toward no real success. Must it be true? That everything I make will be a self, eulogy for what it fails to be, a set of lines across the skin, even this dusky reflection. I am myself looking at this picture of myself, made of metal and light, light and glass. It's there. I can see its strictness. I can see my eyes as ever haunted as a letter O. They are defining me, this pair, this marriage of two hollow suns, but charged. But can a space be charged with accent, what creeps outside the visible? What I see inside the mirror, is it maybe what I can't see, what instead I've been made to perceive? That voice, colonial, scribbled in wrong color, twisted tones, you're such a problem, child. Whiten yourself, straighten your speech. But could it be that what terrifies first is not the image in the mirror, but is the mirror? Fact that I can at all be reflected, can be made to be seen and deeper than what I've been taught depth is. When I wrote, I'm trying to write obsession into it, I meant that deepness, a reach toward a depth. Loss, an understood failure, as when I had them scratch this dumb feather into my skin, death, which is birds lifting this feather, I'm at pain to touch as if communion were true, as if my body were honestly true. I was saying myself, I am too heavy, I'm a screen too scored to lift up, but try it. I think there might be pleasure in this, in failure, might be a need for it. Is that why I'd stare at a burning cross, two men burning at the edge of a field? Is that why when they're absent, I invent them? Is that why I'm there, company with a surface, an echo of myself, an X I make and I make and I make? Do not imagine you can abdicate, a teacher once said, but to imagine, sir, to imagine is the one mirror I trust. The teacher is Auden and Carl Phillips. That poem mentions ekphrasis, which is something that I either depend upon, rely upon, or need to keep moving. This next poem is an ekphrastic piece that speaks to and also reimagines a painting by a Dutch painter. The title of the poem is also attributed to that painting, but for reasons that may become apparent to you once I say it, curators have revised it. And that's interesting to me, that notion of revision. It's not clear that the painter himself titled the painting that. There's three layers of things happening there. There's the painting, and whatever the title was, there was some institution naming it the title that the poem is, and then there's someone coming later in the 90s saying, oh no, that's not right anymore, let's title it something else. There's something happening in that history. This is called Vanitas with Negro Boy, 17th century, oil on canvas. I'll show you a bone made to hold on to, a pep, a dense fire which once the thinking imagination sprawled like a breathing vine. He would put the skull on the table, and nearest to the worn flower, sir, or nearer to the flute, turn just so not to be too crude. That was the boy's job, this cage with a debt in it. And whose boy am I, and what is my name? Black, erasing blackness, body and backdrop, you are not permitted to enter the question light ass of his skin, as if it were a field, a mind, a word inclined to be entered. It's true. His face, his boyhood even, and what is my boyhood, and where is it from, would fade if not for the rope of attention yanked glittering across that face look. This is my painting, my version of the Dutch Stilleben. I'm trying to write obsession into it. And can. Open your eyes. Don't run. Vanitas, from the Latin for emptiness, meaningless. But what nothing can exist if thought does, if the drawn likeness of a bone still exists. Why trust the old masters? Old masters never trust me. Listen, each day is a Negro boy chain slogging out of the ways, panting, gripping the sum of his captain, the head ripped off, the blood purpling down, the red hair flossed between the knuckles, swinging it before him like judgment, saying to the mist, the knot, then quietly only to himself, this is what I'll do, what you dream I do, sir, if you like it. I really like that essay, Craig. So you taught me something. When he did this thing here, I was like, oh my God, what a way to get into the poem and also get into the essay. That was just masterful how that happened. This guy's a genius, how he just did that. He got you into the poem without even reading it first. And then, of course, by the time the poem came, you needed to hear it to have that sort of language with it. That image of the Christ swinging is, I grew up in New Orleans, which is a severely Catholic town. Particularly a large population of Black Catholics, as I was raised. I always think there's something to the fact that every Sunday, I was also an altar boy and all this, I'm watching this sort of eroticized body in suffering. And then people are like, why are you so brutal in your writing? I'm like, well, I looked at that every Sunday. This beautiful lithe, he was a white, but lithe figure crucified. That's, okay, come on. That's going to lead you down a road that you can't come from. So anyway, I had that in mind. Also, this notion of the darkening trapeze and that waiting is important. This is called You Are Not Christ. For the drowning, yes, there is always panic or peace. Your body behaving finally by instinct alone, crossing out wonder, crossing out a need to know. You only feel you need to live, that you deserve it, even here. Even as your chest fills with a strange new air, you will not ask what this means, like prey caught in the wolf's teeth. But you are not the lamb. You are what's in the lamb that keeps it kicking. Let it. No Ararat, New Orleans, Louisiana. It's true. I was there. The city wrestled. The radio said this could be the one. We gathered. I held on to my mother's hand. I held on to my mother holding her mother's hand. I didn't dream this. Awful hollering. I slept through that hollering. Wind and awe of earth. I woke up. You might as well go back, my grandmother said. You didn't sleep through all of it. I woke up. She was laughing. Oh, you should have seen it. It was morning. No sooner did he put head to pillow, Uncle Vernon shot up, hollering the roof. Damn stormed and ate the roof. I didn't dream this. There was a storm. Then there wasn't. The day after came like a hammer through glass. The sky shook off his clothes and was brilliant. I tell you, it was necessary. Violence had to preface such beauty. I saw the downed trees, the downed power lines and broken glass. I saw the life I once had rise from me like a tiny balloon. In the distance, the dome, bright, white as a burning eye. It had the permanency of a mountain, as where Noah landed. My God, I whispered. The radio said there is no God. I'm going to read two more poems. I have one more little quote for you, which is the shortest, by Natasha Trethewey, from one of her poems. She says, I was hurt into poetry. Of course, she is referencing Yeats, Ireland hurt me into poetry, which is brilliant. I certainly understand that. I was hurt into poetry, too. Southern Gothic. About the dead having available to them all breeds of knowledge, some pure, others wicked, especially what is future, and the history that remains once the waters recede, revealing the land that couldn't reject it or contain it, and the land that is not new, is indigo, is ancient, lived as all the trees that fit and clothe it are lived, simple pine, oak, grand magnolia. He said they frighten him at what they hold in their silences. Sometimes a boy will slip from his climbing, drown, but the myth knows why. Sometimes a boy will swing with the leaves. Thank you for all the stuff I've done up here at the Antics and the poems. For listening, this is the title poem. It's also an ephrastic poem of a sculpture that has been replicated many times throughout history, such that we don't know who made the original. The one I originally saw was this miniature in an antique shop in St. Louis. Then the one I researched was this bronze sculpture. It shows a boy withdrawing a thorn from his foot. Something about that, it goes back to Catholicism. I just came back and I was like, there's an image there. And I had no idea that it would become a book. It feels right to end with that. This is Boy with Thorn, 1st century BC, bronze. One. Entered, the shadow spoke his loneliness like a god. Two, this was new knowledge, the kind he had little business knowing, the mere risk of it making it all the more delicious. Three, a forced out confession of forcing it in. Four, each push with a blood yawn like an opiate, each inch a hermeneutics of the self. Five, would you feed on such hurting? Would you drink so much? Six, was he so terrible a thing to look at, but was looked at? Seven, his face chiseled deliberate, his face a question gone unanswered. Eight, there couldn't have been a thorn already inside, his tongue scratching its wrong, speaking at six troubles, nine, how, ten, there could have been a thorn already inside, the point in his eye, what makes the shadows their acutest when they lift and sprawl. 11, I keep thinking of the thorn as a marker, scrawler, which shapes the places both excused and forbidden in his body swamp. 12, violence thou shalt want, violence thou shalt steal and store inside. 13, the spinario, fedele, boy with a message, a mission, piccaninny, who would not stop for damage, the old story goes. 14, shame, guilt, spleen, woe, shock and want. 15, he wanted them gone. I know all his deeper hurts, poorer gods, that lush resentment. 16, but failed. They were greater dark, vows of mystery, done things. 17, take it. Don't you have to learn to take it? Eventually, 18, I told him the thorn was as a key, his body a lock. 19, I made him meet the key up with the lock. Turn 20, I told him Ricky. Turn 21, he did an anti-chrysalis, a lyric, which is a piece of a prayer visible. 22, until he rewound a new republic, a kingdom where not savagely he was king. 23, who could bear the wind? 24, who could feel the self demanding the self? 25, who could see his honesty, his face more handsome once the pain combed through, like a river too clean for love. 26, violence thou shalt want, violence thou shalt steal and store inside. 27, he would devour it. 28, this was his body finally his. 29, he shut the thorn up in his foot and told his foot, walk. Thank you.